and welcome to From the Rookery End. I am DCW, stepping in for John, who's hard at work on a secret project that will be coming to your ears very, very soon. And we're here today to look back on a week that started perhaps with a bit of promise for Watford, but ended with a very, very disappointing performance and defeat at Elland Road. Joining me today is Charlie from WD18, who came with me to Elland Road on Saturday. How are you, Charlie?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back on again. Hopefully my second, or the comeback, can be as good as Harder Helgeson's.
Big shoes to fill there. And also joining us, as ever, is Mike, who was also at Elland Road on Saturday, although he drove up when me and Charlie got the train. Mike, that was your first ever trip to Elland Road, I think, wasn't it? How did you find the experience?
It was, yeah. It's about time I bit the bullet and ticked Elland Road off the list. Last minute call to go up, and if I wasn't rewarded on the pitch with Watford, I think I was rewarded off it. It's ultimately, Elland Road is everything you want, I think, as a football supporter, isn't it? It's everything kind of that modern football isn't. It's that old stadium. It's massive. There's what, 37,000 noisy partisan supporters in there. It's in a big old city, and it's a bit of a throwback, really, isn't it, to sort of the football that we knew when we were growing up. And even if Watford disappointed, the sort of Elland Road experience didn't. There's nothing really in life, I don't think, that makes you feel as small as hearing 37,000 home supporters cheer a goal when you're sort of sat there in the corner, surrounded by Leeds fans as well, there, aren't you? They're below you, to the left, to the right, opposite you. Yeah. And we all know that Leeds fans are noisy. So I thought it was a great experience. Really, really glad to. I would urge anyone who hasn't been there to get up there. I think all too often we go on away days and you know exactly what the stadium's going to look like before you get there. These soulless bowls out of town. Leeds was everything you'd expect Leeds to be. So, a good trip, even if the result wasn't. I think you got treated to a bit of the old Yorkshire hospitality towards the end of the day yourself, didn't you, mate?
I did. So, and I don't think Charlie doesn't know this yet. I haven't told him. So, obviously, I went up on the train with Charlie from London in the morning. We had a nice time, bit of breakfast, beers on the train, got ourselves into Leeds. And the first sign that things perhaps weren't all going to go our way that day was when we got off the train at Leeds. We were told by WD18 Sam Yuko to meet him at a pub called the Headley Verity, which is a Wetherspoons establishment in Leeds. We marched through the city centre, about a 20-minute walk to get there. When we got there, he'd already left. So he's gone to the ground already without telling us. There's no one in there, hardly anyone in this Wetherspoons, apart from a few old boys knocking about, me and Charlie just necking a swift pint to get out of there. Then we get to the ground and we're treated to, as you say, Elland Road is a bit of a throwback. The old concourse is certainly a throwback. Not the best facilities in the old away end there.
Well, you say that, carpeted.
Well,
it's surely the only away end in the country to be carpeted.
The sign of a fine establishment, yeah. So then we had to sit ourselves through the game, which obviously we'll come on to. Then after the game, it's miles back into the city. So we had to wait ages to get a taxi back in. And then everyone had gone.
Because obviously
home.
You couldn't walk, Dave, could you?
Yeah, well, you know, it was a long way. It was a 45-minute walk. Everyone had gone home. Charlie had to get his train back to Manchester, so I bid him farewell. No one else was there. No, everyone else just had left, fled the scene. You'd got in the car with Arlo. There was no one else in the city. So I thought I had a flexible ticket, but I didn't. I looked down at my train app and went and spoke to the man in the desk and said, can I change this ticket? Because it says it's only this time and this date. He said, sorry, mate, you can't. There's nothing you can do. You have to buy a new ticket for. So I thought, sod that. I'm not paying 100 quid just to go home 2 hours early. So I had 2 hours to kill because I booked it thinking that we'd have some jubilant post-victory, post-match beers, which obviously didn't come to pass. So I've got 2 hours to kill in Leeds. So I sloped off to the nearest pub, which was the O'Neill's, packed to the rafters with happy Leeds fans. Watched
any sign of Sam Yuko in there?
No, he'd long gone. Back in Birmingham by this point, I should imagine. So watch Brentford v Everton on the smallest screen in the pub because everything else is showing that absolutely pointless rugby match between England and whoever they were playing. Chile, I think, in the World Cup. It was like 70-something nil. And I'm in there 2 hours having some terrible pints of Peroni. And it's all fine, though. You know, I'm whiling the hours away. Nearly time to get back on the train. I've got my Watford scarf on. And then just before I go to leave, these Leeds fans who've been on the beers for a couple of hours finally clock me sitting in the corner. And a large group of them proceeded to serenade me with a rousing chorus of, you're effing you-know-what for a few minutes. it was all taken in good spirits. And then one, to their credit, one of them came over to me and sort of had a sympathetic chat with me about the game. But then he opened with by saying, said, "To be fair, mate, you were, weren't you?" And, you know, what can you say to that?
Hard to argue, isn't it?
But we had a good chat about the game, and he was a nice fella. And then I made my way back home on the train. But so, from as an away day experience for me, not a great one.
Kind of. That is the almost the archetypal away day, isn't it? Yeah. You travel completely in hope rather than expectation. You're miles away from home. You're on unfamiliar territory. You just got to get through it, and ultimately you got through it. But and I think just getting bantered off by the home fans and stuff. That's what, and but in good spirit, I think that's what it's all about, isn't it? Ultimately, you're sent packing with your tail between your legs, and as Watford fans following Watford up and down the country for the last, what is it now, 266 days, I think it is, on the day of recording, we're pretty used to heading home with our tails between our legs, because we haven't won for that amount of time, have we, away from home?
Yeah, sadly. Well, look, we'll come on to that away record a bit later, but let's talk about that game first and foremost. It wasn't good, was it? It wasn't good at all. And coming up on the way there, Charlie, talking about the game, I felt that we weren't even cautiously optimistic. It just felt like it wasn't going to be our day. I don't know why. And maybe the player, it seemed like perhaps that was the same mentality that the players had, because from the first minute, it felt like we were under the cosh. And Ellenrode was up, and they've not even been in, they've not been in magical form, not been sparkling before this. They've picked up a bit, but they've drawn at home to a couple of, you know, Cardiff, West Brom. They drew with Hull. It's not like they've been absolute world beaters so far, but it just felt right from the first whistle that we're in for a tough afternoon this.
Yeah, it definitely felt like a game which was the third in a week. Obviously, we had West Brom midweek, which was 2-2, going into Ellenrode, which we know is going to be a tough place. A lot of people back them to get straight back promoted. They got Daniel Fark back in, who's obviously had two promotions already to the Premier League. And they've still got a squad with loads of quality. I think their squad costs 130 million compared to ours. But yeah, in terms of the Watford performance, it was disappointing, especially, well, it sounds a bit counterproductive saying, especially the first half, but the first half just felt like we were completely kind of intimidated a bit. The atmosphere was up. It was a classic Ellenrode crowd. Their pressing, their energy was high. We kind of couldn't trap the ball, couldn't put three or four passes together. And that first half, we were just really lucky to go in at 0-0. Dan Batman made two really, really good saves. And we couldn't get clicking at all. And it was only till half-time, Val made a couple of changes where we kind of got a toehold back in the game.
I think you're talking about your conversation on the journey up, chaps. I think, and I felt similar, to be honest. And I think probably most Watford supporters, having watched Watford in action, we felt we probably might be fragile against a big crowd, a team with that excess quality who can be a little bit quicker and a better movement off the ball and exploit some of our weaknesses. So we're allowed to feel a little bit trepidatious about a trip like that. But what disappointed me was, and you've alluded to it already, that the Watford side evidently was. And I think Dan Backman has been quoted in the Watford Observer as saying that they were overawed and they didn't get going and they were a bit frightened or whatever. And it's like that's really disappointing, because this Watford side, for all its faults and weaknesses, has at least looked together and has at least stuck at it and stuck to their guns in the face of some challenges throughout the season so far. So to see the game sort of unravel almost from the kickoff, really, it became apparent pretty much straight away that they looked scared of their own shadows, and when they weren't being frightened of their own shadows, they were chasing Leeds' shadows. Like Charlie said, the ball wasn't sticking. Leeds' movement was very good. They were very, very quick. They were very assertive, very dynamic, looking to get forward very quickly. They pinged the ball around nicely. But Watford did have opportunities to nick possession and then to try and take the sting out of it early, which they had to do if they were going to get anything out of it. And they really failed to do that. The ball was pinballing around. It was sort of rabbit in the headlights type stuff, wasn't it? Right from minute one. And they were inside the box within a minute, weren't they? A ball flashed across, and then you mentioned that Dan Backman had to make two or three good saves in the first half. Leeds had one in the net. There were a couple of decent penalty shouts. So it really was one-way traffic, and that doesn't really do it justice, because Watford were just so timid, so tentative, and just so unable to get a foothold in the game. And I do want to reference that Dan Backman save early on. I think it was from Ampadu, wasn't it, on the edge of the box after about 3 minutes. He struck it firmly. It's a decent height for the keeper, but he hit it hard. Dan Backman was slightly wrong-footed, had to get across to his left. An incredibly strong arm to keep it out. And if that goal had gone in, I dread to think what would have happened, because the floodgates did eventually open, as we'll get onto. But if it had happened in the third minute, knowing what we know, how the game sort of panned out, I really do fear for what happened. So in terms of that, Dan Backman,
you know,
played
what? You saying that there, I mean, this is sort of slightly pointless hypothetical conversation, but I wonder, maybe if they'd scored that, might it have woken us up, given us a kick up the arse? Because it felt like, as the half went on and Backman kept us in the game, we were saying it, weren't we, Charlie? Oh, let's just get into nil. Let's just get in at 0-0, and which, you know, is sometimes, you know, a reasonable aim for a team, especially at a place like Elland Road. But it just felt like the mentality was, we'll try and hold on, but without the necessary grit required to hold on in a game like that.
I just feel we're a completely different side at home compared to away. To be fair, the Coventry performance was pretty good, and we did get at them, but that Stoke performance, especially that first half, was pretty similar. At home, we just look a bit more confident.
That's a bit of a cop-out, though, isn't it, Charlie? Because every man and his dog knows what you're going to get at Leeds United. And these are professional footballers who have had decent experience. There's internationals in there. They're not mugs, this Watford side. Yes, we know that we've got our limitations. If Valerian Ismail has been around the block as well, everyone knows what you get at Leeds.
Yeah, but what you say there, what you get at Leeds this season is they hadn't won.
Well, true, but they hadn't won it. They hadn't lost in five, and they hadn't conceded in three as well. And you know, I was that was a question that was on my lips. I was bugging me on the way home. How have we made Leeds look that good? And I think ultimately, you might be right, Dave. If they'd have scored early, things might have been different. As the game goes on, the crowd did get slightly not nervous, but they got fractious, didn't they? They got annoyed. They started getting annoyed with the ref, which is a surefire sign that things aren't going well. And we actually did reasonably well to hang on in there, but it really was in spite of ourselves. And just to go back to the point about struggling away from home, you've just got to be better and stronger mentally and physically when you go to a place like Elland Road. You're right to say, Dave, that Leeds weren't in the most amazing of form, but you still know what I mean, and you
totally
still know what you're going to get.
It.
You know,
you
marching on
there
together,
yeah,
blares out, all of the 37,000 are singing there, and you know you're pretty much on there on your own. You have to roll your sleeves up and step up and execute. And I think there's far too many of them who didn't. And yes, it was a big ask. It was a very quick pace to the game, I felt. And when a game starts quickly, it is difficult to get a foothold in, especially when the opposition's pinging the ball around. But we did have opportunities. Where we really, really failed was getting out. So Dan Backman, we've spoken about, he did his jobs keeping the shots out. But then you've got Martins and Ince, both of whom making, you know, Ince made a couple of decent runs, and Ismail Kone, who I want to talk about because I thought he was probably one of the poorest on show in that first half. There was a pass through down to the right hand flank to Tom Ince. We could see it from our vantage point in the away end. It was yawning there, that chasm for him to get Tom Ince away, and it's like desperately you just needed the ball over the halfway line, and we needed to ask some questions of Leeds United, who are absolutely rampant, and we just weren't able to do it at all. It was so frantic and frenetic from us, and just the quality was so low. There wasn't anyone able to just slow the game down, get a foothold in, and ultimately get those two wide men in Martins and Ince. And what I thought was fascinating, I know you mentioned it, Dave, was that it all seemed to go down the left. We tried to get Martins involved, perhaps because he's the sort of the trickier, more flair-based player than Tom Ince, but it all tried to go down the left. He had absolutely no joy down there, and Tom Ince sort of cut a lonely figure, didn't he, on that right-hand side? And I don't know what the thinking behind that was or what you guys thought of that.
Well, I think, Charlie, the big problem we had, and this is quite a significant problem, is that we were poor in possession and poor out of possession. So our build-up was terrible. I mean, it's been bad this season, but this is probably as bad as it's been. And then when the time came for us to try and win the ball back and to press or to go in, we weren't going into challenges with enough conviction, enough vigour. When we did win the ball, we were giving it away cheaply, and we couldn't get it out of the defence. And we were trying to play really difficult passes around the corner, sort of a difficult angles, difficult heights, rather than keeping it simple. And it was really notable to see how badly we struggled to build up from the back in this game. And by that, I don't just mean Daniel Backman couldn't pass the ball out as well as we would like, because I don't think he made any particularly bad passes. It was more of a structural deficiency to me, I think.
Yeah, I think Leeds done to us what we've done to a few teams this season in terms of stopping them building out, and we really, really struggled. Porteous and Who, I didn't think, have their best games, especially on the ball, but we couldn't get our midfielders in the game, get a foot on the ball with a bit of space. Mike mentioned Kone. It kind of seems he needs a bit more time than is required at the level. He needs to be a lot sharper. I don't know. Do you reckon it might have been more of a tactical? Were we a bit naive to think that we could go to Elland Road and play this new high-risk Watford play, which is full-backs bombing on against a team? You've got players like Ruta, who I thought was outstanding. He cost £35 million. Were we a bit naive? And we obviously seen at half-time Val made that changes. We went to a more 5-3-2, which is kind of a lot more. We felt like we were strong structurally, and at least we can defend the space a bit better and stop them in their floods of attack. So I don't know, was it right to play our way? And although we know we're in a rebuild and we're not going to get it perfect as we go along, should we be a bit more tactically savvy? Or do you think from the start we should have been a bit more defensive?
No, I think that's interesting. It's an interesting point, that, because I do think we, as I said this on Twitter at the weekend, I think that game is a wake-up call for us on a number of levels. We've all been relatively satisfied to a greater or lesser extent this season. Yeah, you know, we're not up there in the table. We're kind of adjusting to this new reality, but we've kind of been taking some of the positives and liking a bit of the feel of the place and what we've seen. But this is a reminder that there are some really good teams in this division, and we probably haven't come up against many of them at all so far. I think this is the best team we've played so far. And yeah, they've had a little bit of an up and down start themselves, but it looks like if you look at their recent results, they're 0-0 against Hull. They were down to 10 men, so that's a slight anomaly, but they've been scoring goals. They beat Millwall 3-0, they beat Ipswich 4-3, who were right up there. They beat us 3-0. They're getting moving now. And you can see, as you say, £35 million on Rutter. Somerville was really good. Ampadu just looked a different class. I mean, the comparison between Ampadu playing number six for them and Sirauta playing for us in the same role, it was just incredibly stark. And that's not Sirauta's fault necessarily, but Ampadu is a quality player, especially at this level. And I it will be interesting, Mike, to see whether, you know, Valerian made changes at half time, so he obviously recognised it, but will he take this forward? Will this game have any impact on his thinking going forward in other matches when we come up against big teams away from home, big teams even at home? Or is he going to rigidly stick to his guns?
You mentioned Somerville there, Dave. You wouldn't want him in your side, though, would you? Gloves in that weather?
I'd take him. He could wear a snood for me, and I'd have him in the first team.
I mean, look, I think Valerian Ismail is going to have to learn, because you can't have a repeat of that performance. And I think we're right to say, I'm going to throw Charlie's question back at him in a minute as well, just to box off that first half. But I think he is going to have to learn from that, because ultimately we can't have too many more afternoons like that, can we? I think as supporters, it gets very, very difficult to watch games like that too often, doesn't it? And can we play like that against teams who have got who are much better in the final third? You know, looking at Leicester, who are in decent nick, Ipswich look like they're scoring goals for fun, and teams high on confidence and high on quality are really, really going to ask some serious questions of us, aren't they? And Charlie's mentioned Wesley Hurton and Ryan Porteous not having their best games. I don't think anyone had their best games. I think in terms of the week, I think if you start off at Coventry, home against Birmingham, I thought everyone was hitting the heights. Slightly less against West Bromwich Albion, perhaps some mitigating circumstances with the rain there. And then there was another drop again in terms of performance on Saturday. So the curve in terms of performance was very much downward. And I think, yeah, as a head coach, you have to look at that, and you have to mitigate it. You have to learn from it, and ultimately be better. He's got a very, very thin squad. And we've seen that if those performers, if those key performers aren't performing at absolute top level, we're going to struggle probably against every team, most of the teams in the Championship, because it is so competitive. You need players like Martins need to be in the game. You need players like Loser, who I've had an eye on him. You know, Arlo was very, very vocal in his distaste for Imran Loser's performance on Saturday. And I think his performances have tailed off a little bit. And there's been a few telltale signs from him complaining about it against his teammates. I've seen lots of shrugging and shoulders and gesticulating and looking at the bench. Why isn't this player doing that? Instead of, you know, looking to stand shoulder to shoulder and get each other going. Just a few signs like that. And that is the head coach's job to stamp that out. We've seen players dropped. Ben Hamer was out of the squad this week because he was late for a team meeting. We need to see that we can't let the old Watford creep back in. So Valerian Ismail has got a job on his hands, and part of that job is to learn from chastening experiences like Leeds and how he can knit together a relatively threadbare squad to make sure that doesn't happen too often. Because you said earlier, Dave, that we've been quite sanguine and quite sort of okay in the main about what we've seen so far this season at Watford, without it being, it hasn't been anything to write home about, has it? I think we're looking at it in context, and that's fine. But as supporters, you need to see the team developing and learning from tough games like that. And just to box off the first half, throw the question back at you, Charlie. How would you have set Watford up going into that game? Do you think some of it is on Valerian Ismail that it panned out the way it did?
No, I think as coaches, you'll hear a lot of coaches, they'll have their set of principles, and they will stick by them. Russell Martin being one of them. Obviously, Southampton are going through a really, really tricky time at the moment, and they've lost the last four, conceding bags loads of goals, trying to play that way. It's tough, but I do think there needs to be kind of some flexibility in terms of how you play and just knowing your environment. And I think it just showed with those changes. That's what I was most impressed about on Saturday, was probably how the team did react at halftime. Because I just thought it was going to be waves and waves attack. And I did feel like we got better in the second half and we were more stable. And I thought credit to Val for seeing it, making those changes. So it's tough because you don't want to completely throw away everything that we've built on pre-season, all the games, because we have seen an identity which we've been crying out for. We realise we're not the finished article and it's going to need work. And sometimes you're going to come up against a team who are just better than you, and you need to take your medicine and you need to watch the clips back and go, this is what a team, the level above that we're trying to get to, look like. This is our style. This is our identity. We just need to do it better. So I'm a bit torn. I'm glad he didn't go full out defensive, and we're going to start seeing us desperate for points. I think we all know kind of the expectations this season aren't going to be promotion. So I want to see us stick with what we've seen so far, that identity, which I think has been quite exciting. And I think there's been some early signs that we could see a really good Watford team that we can get behind. I just think Saturday was one of those games we played against a better team. And yeah, we have to take the defeat and learn from it.
I do just want to finally, on that point, we did lose to the better team, but you can lose to a better team, and there's a way of doing it, isn't there? And I think the first half was ultimately it was abysmal, really, in terms of the, not even the attacking threat, but in terms of the threat of stopping Leeds building up ahead of steam. Yes, we went in at 0-0, but if that was a boxing match, it had been stopped on points, wouldn't it, at half time? And I think there's a way that you approach these games, and there's a way that you acquit yourself, and we fell massively short of that, certainly in the first half. And I think that's something we need to keep an eye on. And you can talk about how good Leeds are, how much money they've spent, all that sort of stuff, but you know what you're going to come up against. You make your game plan, and you either stand up and deliver or you don't, and they didn't. So that's, I don't want to let them off the hook too easily, but you did allude to it there. I think the half-time changes were comprehensive, weren't they? Who came on? It was Kayembe.
It was three subs. So it was Kayembe, Dele Bashiru and Bayo on for the two wingers, Ince and Martins, and then Kone out from the midfield. So we went from 4-3-3 to 5-3-2. 3-5-2, whichever way you want to look at it. And I think it did make an impact, and it's a relatively low bar to cross, and we still were well beaten in the end. But the first goal came from a situation where we were starting to build into that game. We were starting to get a bit of possession. Dele Bashiru and Kayembe, particularly Dele Bashiru, I thought, were acquitted themselves quite well. They were much better at recovering the ball. We looked much more solid in the central areas. We were getting the ball to Loser, and he was starting to try and make things happen. And indeed, it was a situation where he had the ball and he might have been fouled. in the build-up to that first goal, if you look at it back, but it's, you know, the player probably gets the ball and the man, and it's probably not a decision you get at Elland Road in that sort of environment. You know, and then Porteous throws himself into a challenge, we're done on the break, and it Pirro's unmarked at the back post, and there you go. It's kind of game over, it felt like, from that point onwards. But the changes did make us better than we had been. So from that perspective, that was a positive. And Kayembe and Deli Bashiru, it's positive for them. We'll come on to perhaps Bio in a little bit. But on the flip side, one of the big losers of the game on Saturday was Ismaël Koné. It's the second time he's been substituted at half-time, having been given a start this season. Looked better against West Brom, probably one of his better games, if not his best game that he's had for us since he's joined. But it just does seem to be one step forward, two steps back for him. He just looks raw, but he was just all over the place. He was giving the ball away. At one point, he played the ball through to Leeds. He like played his best part of the game was a through ball to Leeds. And I could see, you noticed this, Charlie, it looked like Valerian and him were sort of having a bit of verbal throughout the first half. Ismaël clearly wasn't very happy. And, you know, you just wonder, is he really going to stick it and make it in this Watford team? Because he just doesn't seem to be able to get any consistency, albeit he's obviously still a young player.
I think there's a player in there. I think at Leeds he was well off it. It felt like he didn't have time to breathe. He came on against Birmingham and was really impressive. West Brom, he obviously had a lot more time where they kind of sat back in more of a mid-block. And I think a lot of people kind of saying after that West Brom game, it was his breakthrough game, he might have been man of the match, and he was really, really good, looked confident. Like you say, Dave, he is really raw. He hasn't played that many competitive games. I don't want to sound too much like an excuse merchant, otherwise might be at me again. But I think we need to stick with him because he's a young lad. And all this team are loads of young players. It's the more experienced players which I'm looking to in those sort of environments to stand up. But yeah, I think he's going to be with young players, very inconsistent. Maybe he's one that you want to give more of a chance at home. But these experiences hopefully will make him better. But I think there's a player in there for Koné, so I want us to stick with him.
There is. And what I thought leapt out is just the pace that he played, tried to play the game at on Saturday was shocking. He felt like you were watching Koné at half speed and everyone else in and time and a half. It was just everything was taking so long, and with what we needed was people to win the ball, control the ball and move the ball. That's what we had to do in possession. We had to be as good in possession as Leeds were, and his was a big role of that, in playing that role in that part of the pitch in midfield. You have to be on it, you have to be able to do it, you have to have a controlling influence on the game. And he had the exact opposite, like you say, Dave. He was almost as effective for Leeds as he was ineffective for us. And I think, you know, that'll be a real headache for him that game. I think absolutely right. His professional football career is only what, really, a year and a half old, isn't it, in terms of his experience? And there's obviously talent there, but he's another one really that's learning on the job. And as we've said ad nauseum, that is a new experience for Ismaël Koné, playing away at Leeds, packed house, really fast-paced game when he's been asked to do so, to do a lot, and he wasn't able to step up. But to go back to the second half subs, I think I was pleased that Valerian Ismaël made those sweeping changes. I think he had to, but it's not all coaches feel able to do it, because they might feel a little bit affronted that he got it so badly wrong that they have to make wholesale changes at halftime, especially when you're still in the game at 0-0 technically. Here's a chance to start again, but he recognised what was happening. And just sort of it, the subs might answer the question as to whether he got it wrong in the first setup, because perhaps if you've got Tom Deli Bashiru in there instead of Koné, the way that Tom Deli Bashiru was snapping into challenges and was sniffing around and making sure he sort of, the way that Watford looked after the ball, worked hard to sort of force Leeds to give it up, and then were better at looking after it with Kayembe and Tom Deli Bashiru. They still didn't have any more time, but they were more composed with their passing, more incisive, and they were only short little balls, but they made sure that Watford kept the ball. We looked more compact, more, there was more intent, at the risk of sounding too basic and reductive about it, that at least we matched Leeds in intensity, I think, for the first sort of 10, 15 minutes of the second half. And ironically, perhaps it was that we built up a little bit of head of steam in terms of competing on a level playing field, in terms of that tenacity, that might have ultimately been our undoing, because Porteous sort of lunged in midfield, didn't he? And that left Perreault, they had their overload on the break, and as soon as we lost it in midfield, you could see what was happening, couldn't you? Perreault streaking down the left. Dan James, all he had to do was pick him out of the back stick and it was going to be a goal, and he did it. So it was frustrating that sort of commitment that we needed to sort of try and wrestle a bit of the balance back, it felt like it cost us. But I prefer it to be that, a little bit perhaps of naivety and a mistake, as opposed to an overall malaise. What's more frustrating was the second.
Yeah, Byron, it's a capitulation from that point onwards. Yeah. It's that the problem is the response to going one down was not to dig in and try and get back in the game. It was to completely collapse. And a few minutes later, we concede one of the most basic goals from a corner you'll ever concede. It was Byron, wasn't it? Sam Byron, who's not as if he's a 6'5" centre half who's found himself free on the edge of the 6-yard box. Porteous gets under the ball. Backman doesn't come for it. No one deals with it. Easy, free header, 2-0. And then that really, you know, the third goal, game's gone by that point. The only sort of chance we did have in the game, I think I said to you about 30 seconds before Bio had his shot, I think I said to you, Charlie, have we had a shot today? And then Asprilla gets the ball, cuts inside, lovely ball to pick out Bio, seemingly relatively simple chance, unmarked in the middle of the penalty area, drags it wide. A familiar tale.
Yeah, feed the crow and he probably won't score. He had that moment. Yasser came on again, who I thought every time he comes on off the bench, he looks like he can make something happen. And he put a really good ball across the box. Bio is probably about 12, 13 yards out and he just skews it wide. And like you said, Mike, that goes in at 2-1 and we've probably got, what, 20, 25 minutes left. Could get a bit of anxiety in the crowd and we're back in the game. So you know you need to when you have those opportunities. But to be fair, it was only one decent opportunity. I don't think we made any big chances in the game. Chapvidetsi had a shot right at the end saved.
That was the only save, wasn't it? That was literally the only save he had to make.
Only shot on target. So I think we can't really hang on to one opportunity.
Yeah, but then again, Charlie, you look at the Birmingham game in which, you know, we were quite effusive after that. And yeah, you're always going to be happy after a 2-0 home win when both goals come in injury time. But we created one chance for Rajovic, he netted it, and that is the difference in football matches. And I guess my question for you guys is, I thought Rajovic, it's hard to be too critical of him in that, because the ball just didn't get anywhere near him, really. It got towards him, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 times in the first half, and he wasn't able to hold it up at all, was he? He looked like a fish out of water, and he didn't have any chances in the second half. We've talked about Bio, you know, Charlie, feed the crow and he won't score. At least Bio, you see him on the pitch and he's active. His finishing is 50-50 at best, isn't it? Reece Healy, injured, but also persona non grata, not getting any minutes. Toby Adeyemo, injured as well, but also probably not up to it at this level. And I've just run through our striking options there. Is ultimately forward options, is that going to be our downfall? With, you know, the defence, we know the limitations. Midfield, we have got options and there's talent out wide. But in terms of people who can actually stick the ball in the net, we really are struggling, aren't we?
I mean, that's obvious, and it's been a topic of conversation all season. But we have scored goals. We were, I think, before the game on Saturday, second in the expected goals table, which, you know, you can read into various ways. But we need Ince to score like he did against West Brom. We need Martins to keep scoring like he has done against Coventry, like he did against West Brom. Those two players, partly through their own fault of not doing well enough when they did get the ball on Saturday, and partly through not getting the ball enough on Saturday, just didn't make any impact in the game on Saturday. But I think those two and players from wide areas, whether Asprilla can chip in with goals, can Chakvetadze start scoring when he gets on the pitch? Loser scored in the first game, hasn't scored since. Can we get him involved? You know, we do need to share the goals around in this team. And if you can get that right, then great. Newcastle had 8 different goal scorers on Sunday at Sheffield United. That's, you know, if you could be a team that shares the goals around, you'll still win games. That's fine. And we're not going to get any new strikers before January, obviously. We've got what we've got. Rajovic, if you give him enough chances in the box, looks like he'll put a reasonable number away, but obviously we just weren't able to do that at all on Saturday. So it's, as I said, it's a kind of a wake-up call. We are where we are, and that is, at the moment, lower mid-table. I think, on balance, we're probably good enough on our day, if everything clicks, to sort of be a top 10 team in this league and maybe push on to the playoffs if we get a run of form and a bit of luck or whatever, but don't have too many injuries, that sort of thing. But we're not in the promotion shake-up. We're not a Leeds. We're not a Leicester. You know, we're not an Ipswich at the moment. You know, we're not even a Hull at the moment. And we've been used to being one of those teams. And it's funny when you speak to fans of other teams, like when I spoke to that Leeds fan after the game, and I was with a Stoke fan on Sunday, and they both still have that impression of, oh, but Watford are a good team, aren't they? They've got good players. You should be up there, because people are used to us being up there, and they can remember us being in the Premier League recently, and they're not paying attention like we are. But when you are paying attention like we do, it is all starting to dawn on us now, really, that we're back to square one. We're a mid-table Championship team. And that brings with it ups and downs, and probably more downs than ups.
It's a difficult one to get your head round, really, isn't it? Because the decline has been pretty quick, hasn't it? It's been quite sudden. And the anecdote about talking to other supporters and they're expecting Watford to be up there sums it up. John Eustace said after the Birmingham game, and obviously there's a bit of self-preservation there, and it's probably a bit of knee-jerk reaction, Watford have got one of the best squads in the Championship. And it's really, I'm really lucky, because I just love going to watch Watford. And ultimately, I'm of the opinion that the Premier League is a distant sort of entity now. And I don't actually think there's a place for teams. Sadly, this is no criticism of Watford or lower teams or how they do business. You look at the three teams that have gone up. I think they won a game between them in 16 games they've played. They haven't won a game between them. They've barely been competitive in any of the games, and that tells you the gap to the Premier League. So I think there's a huge wider issue about the state of the English football pyramid that makes me sort of quite okay about, you know, games like Birmingham at home, games like West Brom at home, where the quality is low, but it feels like a good tussle, and I get something out of going to Leeds United because of the atmosphere, and you get to spend time with you guys, and you see other familiar, you know, all the stuff that you get from away days. But there is, and there will undoubtedly, and it's perfectly reasonable for there to be a groundswell of disappointment that we're here, isn't there? And I think so. Someone came up to you semi-jokingly and said, "Ismail out," but
after the game he did. Yeah, so I think there was a fan walking out of the ground, and he overheard me and Charlie sort of talking about the match, and he kind of agreed with something that we said. I think we were obviously sort of being negative about the performance, and he agreed with something and sort of piped up and went, "Yeah, that, you know, that was really bad, wasn't it?" And he went, "You know what? I'd sack him. I think we need to sack him. He's worse than Rob Edwards." To which we both sort of laughed, and he was on his way. But we're not going to venture into that territory and say, "Oh, do we need to think about changing the manager yet?" Because we've been down that road before, and it's a pointless conversation in many ways. But it won't take that long. If you look at our upcoming fixtures, we've got Middlesbrough at home on Saturday. Then we've got two away games in a week, away at Sunderland on Wednesday the 4th. Then we're away at Cardiff on the Saturday. Now, those are three games which, at the moment, as it stands, by definition of what we've just been saying in terms of the state we're in, could just as easily get 6 or 7 points as we could get none. Middlesbrough won their first game of the season at the weekend. They've obviously been in terrible form, had a really bad start to the season. But I think they're, again, referring to the XG table, perhaps they've been playing a little bit better than the results suggest, and they've picked up a win. They'll be a bit more confident, perhaps, than they would have otherwise been. Michael Carrick will know that he needs to keep it going. You know, way at Sunderland, not an easy game. Decent team on their day. Cardiff have been all right this season, perhaps a little bit better than some have thought. So, you know, we're not talking about Valerian out, because I think we like him, we like what he's doing. But still, that thing we need, that he's talked about and we've talked about now for so long, is a proper run of form. And if we'd won on Saturday, even if we'd got a point on Saturday, then you're able to look at it and go, well, that's four games unbeaten. Now it's like one win in seven.
Yeah, and the away form is tragic. It's absolutely tragic. If you're a Watford supporter that's going away regularly, not to have seen a win since that New Year's victory at Carrow Road, it's appalling, really. And yet, we've only had three games this season, and Stoke was just a bit of a dour game. A bit of quality was the difference. We didn't get outplayed in that one. Coventry was exciting, but again, we were ahead three times, weren't able to see that. We were ahead, with 2 minutes of normal time to go, and we don't win that. And then, you know, at home, we're still making mistakes, and we're not closing games out. And it's frustrating, isn't it? And I think there is, largely speaking, an understanding of where Watford are at in terms of now, because we can see what's in front of us. The squad is what it is. We've got what's available to us, and we're doing an okay-ish job of making the most of that. But it's still a bit of a head scratcher, isn't it, as to, well, And then what? So we finish mid-table this year. Is it going to be mid-table again next year for all eternity? And I think there's so many conflicting emotions at the moment following Watford. Are we coming to terms with it for good? Are we coming to terms with it with a view to rebuilding in a couple of years? Because I agree with people that say this is a reset, but not necessarily a rebuild. Because whilst I'm 100% convinced the atmosphere in that Watford squad and the commitment and the attitude is immeasurably better than it has been for at least two seasons, the investment in the playing staff is nowhere near what it has been previously. The quality is nowhere near what it's been previously. So what is interesting is how are we supposed to feel as Watford supporters at the moment? As I said earlier, I love going to watch Watford. I would go to see them.
You wouldn't know it, judging by most of your WhatsApp messages.
So I get enough out of it. And, you know, I'm old and fat and grey. And I've been there, done it. I've seen the really, really bad and the really, really good. And I'm kind of happy with somewhere in between to get my entertainment. I obviously want us to be as good as we can be. But there's such a hodgepodge of emotions, isn't there, out there? And I think we as a fan base can be forgiven for being a bit confused. And if you're going to err on one side or the other, probably a little bit downbeat about how things are going, because it just feels like the decline is continuing, almost like managed decline.
I disagree. I think this pod might have a bit of a negative glaze on it. But for me, I think what we've seen this season on the whole has kind of levered just a bit more to be a bit positive. We've seen on the pitch a team that are committed, which is completely night and day from the teams we've seen the last two or three seasons. It's just all about our expectations. For me, all I want to see this season, we're not going to go up. So if we finish mid-table, but we see some really good performances, we can see progression, and slowly, slowly, we know we're not going to turn into another great team in one window. We've got rid of so many players, 20-plus, including our quality players as Saar and Pedro. It's going to take time. So I just want to see progression at every stage. And I think this season, we're going to be mid-table, but if we see some good performances, a team, and then maybe in January we can add one or two and we can keep that progression. And ultimately what we all want to see, well, me personally, is Val be there in May. And I think that would be the biggest progression as a club, if we can have a season of stability where we can see a team together and slowly progression. But Mike, I feel like you're going to disagree.
I agree that that would be progression, but that should, keeping the same manager for a season shouldn't be a high bar. It should,
but that's
be
the reality
seen.
That we're in as Watford Football Club under Gino
Bosco. It absolutely is. And so therefore, you know, I want that as well. But also it's kind of perhaps we should be entitled to that. And I know as football supporters, we all run the risk of being entitled. But really sort of sticking with the manager and not sacking him at the first sign of things going south, he should be entitled to expect a little bit more than that. And but my question is, and this is probably more of an open question, I just want to leave it hanging there, is we finish mid-table this season, Charlie, or we flirt with the relegation zone, we finish the season comfortably, we look okay, we stick with Val, we've got some good games, we've got some bad ones, and it's just a sort of average season, that's absolutely fine. Are the signs there that then there is a desire to build on that? Because I'd question that, and that could be just me settling. That could just be me feeling like Watford have found their natural place in the grand footballing scheme of things, and not getting too high, not getting too low about the whole thing. But as supporters, you do want to see that progression, and I don't know where it is, and that it is a very long term question. That, and there's no answer to it at the moment. We'll only know when we're having this conversation in six months. A year's time, but it's just this sort of slight fuggy feeling about how we're supposed to be feeling about this Watford side. There's so much to be positive about, Charlie. You're right. I think I like the manager. I like the cut of his jib. I like the discipline. I like the look of the side. I like the fact that they look committed. We've got likeable players again in the main. I like the fact that they're sticking to their guns. They're trying to play a particular way. We've got an identity. I like the way that Val is changing things when he has to. So, yeah, compared to where we've been, much better. Loads to enjoy. And people are going to Vicarage Road more out of looking forward to it as opposed to duty, which it has been.
I think, Mike, what you're saying really hints or shows really how fragile we still are as a fan base, because 4 or 5 days ago, after a entertaining and full-blooded, if a little bit unsatisfying draw against West Brom, and before that a thrilling late victory over Birmingham, we're all feeling quite happy. We're always relatively positive. We're bouncing along. Let's see if we can get something at Leeds. All of a sudden, we get absolutely hammered at Elland Road, and it brings all of the bad feelings back to the surface that were only just beneath it. And it sort of made us, maybe it reminded us of being in the Premier League. It kind of felt like we were away at a Premier League team in a big stadium and they're on top of us and we just had no chance. And all those games that we had in those last few Premier League seasons, those memories and those thoughts came rushing back. And I think that's where we're only one sort of terrible defeat away at the moment from kind of sinking back into sort of self-preservation crisis mode. Whereas, as Charlie's just said, there are reasons to be optimistic and we are perfectly right to feel optimistic over the course of what we've seen over the 8 games so far this season. So just to look a little bit more in the short term, Charlie, Middlesbrough at home this Saturday, based on what we've said about the team today and what we've spoken about in terms of individual players, do you expect that perhaps the likes of Dele Bashiru, Kayembe may start on Saturday? Do you think he'll mix it up again? What do you think we'll see?
That Kayembe second half performance was very reminiscent of when he came on against Stoke and we thought, oh, he's played really well there. But when he starts against Blackburn, he doesn't perform as we'd like. I think Tom Deli's got a good shout to get in. I think he's been pretty good this season. It's great to see his energy in the middle. So yeah, I think Tom Deli's probably got the shirt. And I quite like that. Like, Kone played well against West Brom and it feels like he kept the shirt and foul, paid him that faith, and maybe he didn't repay the faith by putting in another good performance. But yeah, I'd like to see Tom Deli. I think Martins has been one of our biggest threats this season, so I think he'll stay in. Yasser Asprey is the one that is always tricky. I remember speaking and there's kind of this narrative that, oh, he's not good when he starts for Watford, but that was one game against Blackburn this season. I think he's made about 3 or 4 starts in his Watford career. So can we squeeze in Yasser Asprey to this team? Because I think he is one of the few players who has got that undoubted quality and can make things happen. But we wanted the fullbacks to start against Leeds in Lewis and Andrews. They probably didn't have their best game, but we feel like they're the better ones. So, yeah. For me, I'd like to see Asprey maybe make a start. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think Asprey is interesting. How do we get him into this team starting consistently and being a proper, effective, productive part of this team? Because the quality is obviously there, but is he coming in off the right? Is he starting in that right-wing position and coming inside? Or do you give him one of the sort of two more advanced midfield berths? The same, to a lesser extent, can be saying for Chakvetadze, you know, a player who's in glimpses looked like a talented player, but just hasn't had the opportunity really to stamp his authority on a game. Because Martins looks dangerous, probably deserves to start. Although, will be interesting, as you said, maybe this is the chance to roll the dice, having taken him off at half time. Maybe you say, look, actually, you need to sit this one out and I'm going to give someone else the start this time. Ince has looked all right and he's the sort of one of the more senior players, so perhaps he brings something else on the pitch in terms of his experience and his leadership that somebody like Asprey or Chakvetadze wouldn't. I would love to see Asprey and Chakvetadze start if we can make that work and still keep the team balanced and functional, because I think, why not? They both look good. Let's give them a go from the start and let's see. But it's, again, sort of trying to be positive about it. One of the great things about this season is that we do seem to have a lot of options off the bench and we can change games when we need to, but perhaps we've needed to change games a bit more than we would have liked to. Well, some interesting decisions for Valerian Ismail to make ahead of that game against Middlesbrough on Saturday. If you're going, enjoy the game. Hopefully, the day will end with me being in the O'Neills next to Watford Junction, hurling some good-natured abuse at a solitary Middlesbrough fan who's in the corner having messed up their train home. We'll see. But Charlie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me again, lads. Enjoyed it.
Mike, chin up, mate. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for not saying chins up, by the way, Dan. Very kind of you. Come on, you horns.
We'll see you next time.